I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Figure. We've done that thing. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they sink sardines. Will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
I understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. He was a wonderful leader, but he wasn't a magician.
Well, take him out, son. I mean that. Take him.
So, as we record, we're on the cusp of 30 days of live football. The Euros, which will be seen each and every game, Andrew, live with us on BN Sports. If you live in our part of the world, the Middle East and North Africa, or indeed New Zealand, we record Friday morning.
Correct.
We shall get round to talking about the Euros shortly. Mm-hmm. We're in the company of football royalty, really.
Would you go that far?
Probably not. Paul Robinson's here.
Robbo's with us. Yeah, we couldn't get royalty. Robbo said he'd step in. No, it's good to see the big man.
It is very good to see the big man, who's part of our lineup as BN Sports, as I said, cover the Euros. Gianfranco Zola's here. Really good to see Jan last night. Mm-hmm. Peter Schmeichel will be joining us. We'll also have Ruud Gullit, Arsene Wenger, Bakary Sagna, which will be interesting.
Marcel Desailly. Oh, you forgot one.
Go on.
Jason McAteer.
Of course.
Come on, you. He's not going to forgive you now. No. You just realise that you forgot him.
He's one of the best there is, you know. You know how early he prepares and how early he gets to shows. Yeah. He's ready, you know.
He's always early. Never late.
He was ready yesterday for a show 4 hours before he could. Sorry, Jace. Much to our amusement. Anyway, my name is Richard Keys. This is Andy Gray.
Yes.
And we're in the company of Paul Robinson this week. You're now listening to us. Well, you may be. And if you're not, you can. Via the Acast platform, which is the home of all the top pods from sport, comedy, history, you name it. And it is very nice to be part of the team.
We'd cover all of that, wouldn't we? Sport, comedy,
probably,
and history.
Yes, yeah, in the same podcast. I say this every week. Big hello and a thanks to all of our new listeners. No matter where in the world you are, we really don't take you for granted. We know you have lots of choice and could use your listening time in lots of different ways as well. So we really appreciate that you've chosen us, and you can follow us, make a note, Robbo, on Twitter and Insta. Mm-hmm. That's youth.
Right. Robbo knows all that.
I'd have to get the kids to do that.
No, you're up to speed, aren't you?
No, that's not my bag, mate.
It's not at all. No, it's not.
Not at all.
At Keys and Grey Pod.
You're like me then.
Keys and AND Pod. Across Europe, of course, we're all looking forward to the Euros, which start, as I said, tonight, Friday, our time. Now, Andrew, I always offer you a little quiz at this stage of the podcast.
Yes, you do.
Big jump in listening figures recently in this particular city. Here you would find Sloane's.
Yeah.
The Old House Arms.
Yeah.
Quinn's. Camp Hill Vaults.
Camp Hill, South Africa.
The Carnarvon Bar.
South Africa, Cape Town.
The Horseshoe Bar.
Glasgow.
I cannot believe it's taken you that long. Yes.
I was thinking more exotic, really.
The City by the Clyde.
The Horseshoe Bar gave it away. That Horseshoe Bar, I have to tell you a story, Robbo. You know, the Horseshoe Bar is it's a bar, obviously, the name tells you what the bar is shaped like. At one time in the early 90s, it was regarded as having the longest unbroken bar surface in the UK, certainly in the UK, maybe in Europe. And it was a, you know, like you and I'd go and have a pint. Yeah. Everyone went in there for a pint. So we decided to take Mr. Keys in there one day in the early days of Sky. He was up to working in Glasgow with some friends of ours, Andy Melvin. Who was with Shreevesy with us?
I think our gaffer was there. Vic Wakeling was there as
Vic
well.
Vic Wakeling was there as well. Yeah. So we all go in and we order. Right, what are you having? I say, I have a pint of lager, pint of lager, pint of bitter, pint of heavy for you. Yeah. Keezy, could I have a spritzer, please?
Paul Ball stopped. Everybody stopped and looked at him. Who is this imposter?
His silence was deafening. The guy went, oh, what?
Where's this imposter come from?
I needed to be careful. I was working.
That was funny, the horseshoe.
Look, I want to talk about the Euros a lot today, but before that, you two are perfect to cover two stories at the moment that have no conclusion. One, Tottenham manager.
Oh, Robbo, over to you. Oh,
it's just been a fiasco, hasn't it? I mean, how long is it going to be going on? Daniel Levy sacked Mourinho when he did. The questions were asked about it. I personally thought the timing of it was terrible.
So did Mourinho this week, saying he's won 23 and a half trophies.
23 and a half trophies.
That's great. That's a trick.
But I just think Daniel's normally been brilliant. His decisions, the contingency plan, everything. But there just doesn't look to have been any kind of contingency plan. And at the moment, it just doesn't look like there was a plan. Every manager that he's spoken to or they've been linked with hasn't taken the job. And now they've ended up with a manager that doesn't exactly fill you with excitement,
It looks like he will be. Yeah. It looks like Fonseca is the man. But
he's gone about it the wrong way. He's employed the sporting director. And then he's obviously looks like he's been entrusted to appoint the manager. I don't know whether that manager would have been chosen.
The manager who was sacked to make way for Mourinho.
Well, the manager who finished mid-table in Italy and sacked. Then Jose took his job. So basically Roma and Tottenham just swapped managers.
See, if I was in charge at Tottenham, you know, I would appoint Jürgen Klinsmann, which I think would be a really popular choice with the fans.
That's a great show.
Give myself 18 months breathing space. You're in for a bumpy ride anyway, Spurs, over the next five. I've said this to you before, 5-10 years. I mean, if it's true they sacked Mourinho to save 10 million, that tells you how much financial trouble they're in.
Well, I think your Klinsmann point is valid. If they sack Mourinho the week before the cup final and bring him in to have an impact between then now and the end of the season, if you bring Klinsmann in the week before the cup final, give the lads a lift, give the place a lift.
Fans
would
love
it. Supporters get behind it.
I think they would.
And then you have a push for Europe as well at the end of the season instead of finishing with a whimper like that.
Now, you're going to have to come off the fence at this point.
What do you mean? I'm going to have to come off the fence. Listen to that, Rob.
Everton manager.
What about him?
Benitez.
No. Not for me.
Do you want to think about that?
No. Rob, I don't. I mean, if he was the best coach in the world, I might. You'd have to seriously think about it. But I don't think he is now. I really don't. And I don't want him to be Everton manager. His football's not brilliant. He's very pragmatic. We know that. He won two titles in Spain, being very pragmatic with Valencia. And we saw the kind of job he was doing at Newcastle. The Newcastle fans love him and think he was sensational. I didn't see it.
Only because he fell out with Mike Ashley.
Yeah,
and that's
the problem with
one of the many problems for me with Benitez. He falls out with the management structure, not for me. Everywhere.
I hope we don't go down that route. And it surprised me a little when I listened to a lot of Evertonians who I've heard over the last couple of days think, well, maybe we could, maybe we should. No, he would be way down. As I say, if he was the greatest coach in the world and he was available, then I'd have to swallow it and say, yeah, okay, let's have him in at Everton. But no, I don't want Benitez there.
What about Steven Gerrard? Would you take him?
It's different.
Well, Stevie's
because he's young, talented
manager.
He's also an Evertonian.
An Evertonian. Yeah, good point, Richard.
We talk about Tuchel and Nagelsmann, the young, exciting coaches. Yeah. Why not Steven Gerrard and Scott Parker? Why aren't they talking about the same?
Would Steven entertain Everton? Having just left Liverpool, three years ago?
The timing would be wrong. I think he probably would.
I agree with
you. But I think he wants to have a run at Europe with Rangers.
Do you not think he wants to, and I hate to say this as a Rangers man, but do you not think he also has half an eye on Liverpool?
Oh, I think that's the end game, without a doubt. I think wherever Steven ends up after Rangers, if indeed there is anywhere, wherever he goes, they're going to be looking over the shoulder because when Liverpool come calling, that's his club. Mm.
So England's footballers arrived, pictures of the family in their hotel rooms.
Nice touch.
Scotland were handed hampers by their captain, Andrew Robertson, full of Arn Brew.
Oh, Arn Brew.
And shortbread.
I'm brewing shortbread. Oh, excellent.
Well, I thought it was rather nice.
Nice touch. Well done, Andy.
This is an unusual story, but I had to mention it. A police charity has been told it can't sponsor an under-15s football team because the word firearms is included in its name. The Police Firearms Association PFOA wants to provide new kit for Charteris Football Club's youth side in Cambridgeshire, and the FA have said no. That's you can't do that.
Yeah. FA are great, aren't they?
But surely that helps raise awareness in for the kids as well.
VAR lines are set to be thicker. This is the conclusion of a solution
at last. Yes. Excellent. Brilliant.
A deep rooted investigation into the shambles that is VAR. The changes follow a survey of club managers, captains and sporting directors. Fans' views of the VAR system will also be taken into account. Well, that's not true, because if they were, they would drop it.
Yeah, correct. The vast majority of fans don't like it.
No. But they're going to make the lines thicker.
Excellent.
Waiting for 2 years, by which time we will have automatic offsides.
And kick-ins.
Well, kick-ins are coming.
No.
I know you keep laughing at me, but kick-ins are coming.
No, I'm sorry.
Kick-ins instead of throw-ins in the defensive half of the pitch. Because the argument is that when you take a throw, you're one man down. David Moyes' piece was brilliant in the Times last Saturday. And he made that point about how much, I mean, we've laughed at Liverpool employing a throw-in coach.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's statistics now about where the ball's thrown. The one down the line, they don't use anymore. In control, switch.
They still use the one down the line.
So you've got, apparently, one man less when you're taking a throw for a millisecond, probably, especially if you're giving the ball back.
You also have possession of the football with that man who's off the pitch.
Yes, but the kick-in will come in because that apparently gets around that issue. Roll the ball in. So, I can't imagine they'll just allow you to whack it in.
Well, of course they will.
I don't think they can do that. Robbo would boot,
edge of his 18-yard box,
Big Sam,
taking a throw and then smashing out the edge of the other box.
Big Sam and Daishi would have me on all throw-ins from the edge of the box to the halfway line, and everyone would be an attacking set piece.
Well, I don't think you can do that. There'll be a reason. Probably like we used to play when we play six-a-side, nothing above head height.
You're taking it in the realms of ridiculous.
And what lines are they going to bring in to enforce that rule?
I promise you.
A five aside, then. No heading at all.
Kick-ins.
Who's head height though? Crouches or Franco Zola's?
Yeah, good point.
I promise you, it's coming.
Yeah, well,
it's coming.
Honestly, if they keep on tinkering with this sport and the way that they're doing, they're not going to improve it. They're on their way to.
Well, the last count, David Ellery, who's now in charge of these matters, had instigated 179 law changes since taking charge. 179, it's extraordinary.
Destroy it.
Breakaway players face work permits being revoked. Overseas players and managers at Premier League clubs who take part in breakaway competitions, such as a European Super League, will have their work permits revoked under new rules from the Home Office. I rather think that would end up in court, double quick. Can't see that at all. I really can't. I know what they're trying to do, but you're not going to stop it. The Super League will come in one form or another. Not necessarily this upcoming season, but soon enough. England's playlist ahead of football matches, they put
what do you mean the playlist
coming home?
What about the playlist? Do you mean that before a game?
Yeah.
So while the teams are out in the pitch and warming up.
Yeah.
Not the dressing room, the stadium.
The stadium.
So
the Scots have selected Yes Sir I Can Boogie for Hampden.
Yeah, okay, I don't mind that.
And the Welsh German techno band Zombie Nation.
Yeah, we've also got the Proclaimers and ours as well. Yeah. And Run Rig, I think, are doing one.
I just
wish
they wouldn't play Football's Coming Home.
Why not? Go on then.
I'll tell you why. I get it. You see, Robbo's laughing. I get it from an England point of view.
For him.
I get it. But and I know it's an ironic song about the hurt that England have suffered since 1966. I understand that. But it is not viewed that way outside the borders of England. It is viewed as an arrogant expectation that England believe, A, they're going to win the competition that they're in, and B, that football's home is England. And it's not. It's not. Okay, so many, many years ago, England gave the game to the world, but the world now owns football, not England. And that's how it's viewed. And I've always said this to Andy. You meet a member of the Football Association, or certainly was the case 5 years ago, walk into a meeting of international representatives. Good afternoon. I'm Paul Robinson from the FA. And overseas members of different football associations would look, what FA? Oh, the FA. You mean the English FA?
I think you're just thinking too deeply about a song that just gave the country a feel-good factor. I think you're analysing it too much.
The country,
I don't think it has that
it will
meaning.
Give a feel-good factor, granted. Abroad, it's viewed as arrogant. And that is a massive problem when it comes... And that's why I say it when it comes to trying to persuade people to give England a World Cup, which they're going to pitch for again soon.
Are they?
You irritate people, Andy.
Oh, hold on. You've got a European Championships.
Well, yes.
You're playing every game at Wembley.
We've also got concerns about Sunday, 28-degree heat. What an irony. I'm sitting in Qatar, where everybody's been for the last 10 years complaining about how hot it's going to be for a World Cup, and it's not. No. It'll be 20 degrees.
Yeah.
And we're concerned about 28-degree temperatures at Wembley.
I don't get that about the World Cup here. I go home, people say, oh, about the World Cup in Qatar, you work out there, you've been out there, how hot's it going to be? It's going to be boiling. Well, actually, no. The last World Cup in Russia will be twice as hot as it is here. Yes. It's dark at 4 o'clock and you need a jumper on a night in the winter.
That's so true.
You won't need a jumper. That's an absolute certainty.
It is true.
Yeah.
So, shall we turn our attention to the Euros?
Yeah.
Deal with England first, and then we'll be joined by a couple of guests that I hope are well known to many. So, football's coming home.
Listen, they've got a great opportunity, but I think you get a bit sidetracked with being patriotic about the country, playing at Wembley and everything. They've got a really good opportunity. They can beat anybody on the day. But you look at the likes of Spain, France, Italy, Germany, Belgium, you forget the teams that are in there and what England are going to have to do, Portugal, to actually win this tournament.
But Andy makes a very good point. England do have home advantage.
A huge advantage with fans at Wembley as well. The good feeling around the country, which we could all do with at the moment after the last 12, 18 months that everybody's had. It's a real opportunity to do something for the nation, to put a bit of feel good into the country. And I think attacking wise, yes, look at the final two-thirds of the field. There's enough to scare anybody on that field. I think too often they play too defensive with the two defensive midfielders. They defend their weaknesses rather than playing to the strengths. I'd love to see a team where he just goes, do you know what, that's not the formation I'd like, but that formation gets me Foden, it gets me Mount, it gets me Grealish, it gets me Sterling, all in the team.
I wonder, my only thing with England, and they're all talented footballers, is age. Now, there's an awful lot of talk about your young talent, and quite rightly so, because it deserves to be talked about, because certainly this season it's performed magnificently. Oh. But this is the first tournament they've gone into, really together. The Euros with 17-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds. And as much as England are so positive about that, might it be a negative, or is the mix good enough?
I think the mix is good enough, and I think the youth in there, it's a bit of naivety as well, because as you get older, and if you've been knocked out of tournaments, you've been scarred, whether it be on the pitch, whether it be in the press, mentally, or whatever it is, you know what it's like to lose a tournament. These players are young, they're fearless, and I think that'll be an advantage to them. I mean, you look at the way Grealish played in the last two friendlies. He's missed a bit of the season with his injuries at the end.
Will he be playing in football boots, do you think, or ice skates?
he gets fouled,
the most foul player in the Premier League, you mean?
Really?
Yes. He wins so many free kicks for his team.
I don't know if Gareth will play him, though.
Correct. He wins so many free kicks for his team. And that wasn't a penalty, by the way.
I didn't see that one.
I did.
Did you?
Yeah. Stay on your feet, Jack. Come on.
What if he wins you a free kick that wins you the Euros?
I would rather it be won the right way than suffer those that might also feel that about gaining an advantage in that manner for their team.
Everybody does it, Keys. They're all naive. Not
quite like that. Jack's an expert. Sorry, Jack's an expert.
You don't think he'll play?
I don't know. I don't know if Gareth will pick him or not.
I'd
definitely pick him. I'd play a midfield three. I'd have either Rice, Henderson or Phillips in the middle, and I'd put Grealish on
Henderson,
one side.
An unfit Henderson.
I said Phillips or Rice, I think.
That's
Rice.
Interesting, though. That's the thing. We were with Jason McAteer yesterday, who actually made a statement that kind of pricked our ears up a little bit, where he said...
time are we on air?
apart from that, and why you got a collar and tie on this early?
At 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
He said he doesn't think England can win the Euros without Jordan Henderson in the side.
And we just looked at each other. We were amazed, weren't we? Listen, I think that his leadership qualities are there for all to see. I think the point Jason was making was he didn't feel there was any leaders on the pitch without Henderson around. But I think the players, Declan Rice or Calvin Phillips.
All these boys are leaders as well, aren't they? Really?
They'll manage themselves.
Do you think England are over that dreadful era where players were scared to put the shirt on? I've had this conversation with Frank Lampard, who said, yeah, I was one of those. I didn't enjoy playing for my country because of the weight of the expectation, the criticism, the ridicule from the media when things didn't work as they should have done. Are we over that? Did you feel like
that? Yeah, absolutely. I was in the same team. And that 2006, the so-called golden generation that we talk about, at times when you play for England, if you won, you were expected to. If you drew or you lost, you got slated. Mm. And that was just how it was. The benefits of playing for England were incredible. It was such a proud thing to be able to do. But there's certain games and certain times I certainly didn't enjoy because you knew what was coming after a game. I think Gareth handled the media very well. I think he's integrated them with the squad. The players are not untouchable to the media now. They're accessible. And I think he's handled that side of it well. But if they don't perform and if, you know, if things don't go well, say for instance, they don't get out of the group, you know what will come in the media.
Mm. Unlike the Prime Minister of the UK
yes.
and Ireland, I am aware that we do also have Scotland and Wales playing in this tournament. He wasn't when his representative wished, quotes, our team all the very best.
He was a bit remiss.
Did he not know? I've not seen that.
No. But in the Commons, he was picked up on it by Ian Blackwell.
Yeah, SNP.
SNP. Mm. And he did concede that Scotland were there, but he also then forgot that Wales were as well. I mean, what a buffoon, honestly. Honestly, let's join our guests, or rather, let's invite our guests to join us. Uh-huh. And those guests are Mark Bowen, who for a long time was working with Mark Hughes during his 17-year Premier League career and 11 top 10 finishes the pair conjured between the two of them.
Why are they still out of work then?
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
More recently, Mark was at Reading, where he took a long-term friend from Stoke to Reading and just told us before Charlie joined us, and I have to reveal this, Charlie, Charlie Adam we're talking about.
Yes.
He said, I prolonged his career. I took him to Reading and got him fit.
And got him fit. That's scandalous.
Charlie, this is an outrageous slur. What have you got to say?
Listen, I've been having it for years, and like you say, they looked after me for a few years at Stoke, so I had to repay it. And no, listen, we had a good time. It just unfortunate circumstances that changed. It's a good club, Bowl. I've told you, it's a good club. It's just difficult scenario situations with what goes on, and you know, I never played enough games to do that. But you know, it was great to work with them from a different perspective as a manager. You know. It's different as assistant manager where you could be quite friendly and things like that. But as a manager, you have to be quite, you know, honest and open about it. And he was, and it was great to work with him.
In fairness, I would expect you to say that, Charlie, but now tell us the truth.
No, and the thing is that that's the way we are. And that's, you know, the thing for me is, like you say, Mark Hughes's and Bo's record in the Premier League, to not see them back in football or involved in football again since it's happened it's incredible.
Yeah, it is.
I agree.
And
you're back soon, you know, Chad.
And I'll be on the phone. Hopefully,
I was going to say, stay fit, Charlie.
Exactly. Are you still doing the coaching stuff, Chad, or not?
Yeah, no, still doing it, Bolt. I've been working with the under-20s at Dundee, and the manager's trying to get me involved in a bit of the first team, which is hard because, you know, you don't want to say too much because you're still a player. But he asks your opinion. Like, you know, I've been on the phone this week. He's talking about players and contacts that I have in England that can help him bring players in. And hopefully we'll have a player over the line in the next few days that I've been involved in trying to make the deal happen. So you've seen a different side of it, but he's given me that responsibility still.
That's good that he's using you.
Yeah, and he's using the experiences, my contacts that we have in England and trying to bring players in because, let's say, you've got to find these ones. So it's good. And I'll play for another year and then we'll sit down and see where it goes. But
play as long as you can, Chaz. Play as long as you can, fella. I'll tell you, that's what I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, long time retired. I mean, it's a very good point he makes, Bo, about coach to manager. What are the differences? What did you find in that respect?
Well, like Charlie said, you know, I had nearly 20 years as a number two, and it was different. You know, I told you before, people sort of classed me as an assistant all the time. And of course I was, and ultimately the buck stopped with Mark Hughes. But because of our relationship, having known each other since we were, 10 years old, if you like, it was never quite that way. It was I played a big part in everything that went on. How we prepared teams, what our philosophy was, and you know the way we went about our work and everything. So it wasn't such a big step. But having said that, yes, what Charlie said is right. When you've got to make the decisions, it is hard for any manager, you know, in terms of naming the sides and players. When you're working with players and you get really close to them, the hardest part I find is leaving them out, and not just leaving the ones out of the team who may be on the bench, but guys who've played all week, and then you've got to tell them they're not even getting stripped on a Saturday. They're sitting in the stand or they're not travelling. Mm. And you know it breaks their heart because they're footballers. They want to be involved. They want to play.
Mm. Yeah, of course.
I think if I could jump in there, the thing for you, for Bo, is who's now obviously wants to be a manager, has been a manager. I didn't see a difference in you as a manager from where you were as an assistant. That's just the character you are. But sometimes you get people that they go above, think that they go beyond the stage of, they go from a first team coach to a manager and they think, oh, all of a sudden I'm in charge here, I'm in control. But for me, and I'll say on the thing, it was just, you were more of still everybody's mate but coach. But when you had to make the right decisions, you made the decisions. And that's one thing that sometimes is difficult to make as a manager, where you have to go and sometimes come in and nail somebody. Instead of a first team coach, you could sort of, you know, go around it a different way. But for you, it was what I seen, and obviously it was just like, no, this is how it is. And it was good to be part of that. And listen, it's a learning experience. It doesn't matter how much you've coached and everything, but to be able to stand there and make the big decisions at the right time, it is tough.
You also need I think, to be pliable. As you're talking, I'm thinking, Andy, about the time we were on the radio at TalkSport and Billy Whitehurst joined us.
Yes.
Billy was at Oxford. Maurice Evans was the manager. And Billy, I think we all know, was
he's a tough guy.
He was a tough guy.
Yeah.
Maurice Bowers, he's got the team on a piece of paper and he's putting it onto the whiteboard. And Billy's hovering over his shoulder as he puts the keeper in and the back four. And Billy can see his name's not on this piece of paper.
Yes.
And he said, am I in, Gaffer? And Maurice looked at him, and Billy looked back somewhat threateningly. Yeah. And Maurice said, of course you are, Billy.
Oh, you're in, Billy. Yeah, no, yeah. Billy, yeah. I wouldn't pick a team without you, Billy. Don't be silly.
Right, gentlemen, brilliant. Let's talk about the Euros. What chance the Welsh, Bo?
Oh, does Charlie know we've got Paul with us?
Oh, no, have I not mentioned that? How rude of me. Bo knows that Paul Robinson's this end as well, Charlie. Sorry. Really, really sorry.
My Charles, you all right, mate?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Mark, obviously, I think we all agree the semi-finals are probably a game too far this time around, but what is a good Euros for Wales?
Well, it is genuinely, it's one of the Welsh team, honestly, they could go out there. They've got, by the way, they've got a really difficult group, I think.
Yeah,
you have two games in Baku in Azerbaijan against the Swiss and Turkey, and then the final game against Italy and Rome. So I had a look at the Welsh team, and honestly, I'm not fudging the question, Rich, but they're capable of losing all three games 1-0, and they're capable of winning all three games 1-0. They generally are, because on the day that Wales can beat anybody on the day, and I mean that, anybody, they could beat, you know, France like they did 4 years ago. They beat Belgium, they beat Russia. You know, they're well capable of doing that. And the one thing I have been saying is that, you know, they've had the situation with Ryan Giggs, and now you've got Robert Page going in, and obviously before that Chris Coleman. But really, the system hasn't changed since really Gary Speed sort of didn't hand over, bless him, but Chris Coleman took over from Gary. And they play the same system. They play, you know, the same. Everybody's got the same jobs, more or less. I'm looking back to 4 years ago when they did ever so well. 5 years ago when they did ever so well. And it's really only the back players. You know, they've lost Ashley Williams, has dropped out of the situation. Obviously, James Collins isn't there. Neil Taylor, perhaps. But from there on in, they more or less got the same players they had to choose from then. Plus, they've obviously got the likes now of Harry Wilson, David Brooks coming in, Dan James coming in. So talented young players, Ampadu coming into the situation. So I actually make them a stronger squad, a better squad, let's say.
So final
this
then.
This time than they were last.
So final then.
Charlie, what about Scotland? I mean, actually, as you talk, Mark, you're persuading me that Wales have got half a chance. What about Scotland, Charlie?
Well,
for 88 minutes, I thought we were going to win it against. I thought we were going to win the Euros against Holland, and then Depay steps up and scores a free kick. So,
yeah.
I think there's more. There's a buzz now around the country. We seem to be. Listen, I think we've got some good players. I do think that adding Gilmore into a squad. Makes us better. I think he's a top player. I really do. I think he's got a huge career ahead of him. And I think he's probably the only one in the squad that's capable of being able to go and dictate a game for us, as in get on the ball, express himself. You know, he can pass it. He can, you know, he's playing at one of the biggest clubs in England and in Europe. So I hope that he plays. But I'm quite confident. I think, like Bo said, if we have two games at Hampden and obviously we play England at Wembley, I think if we get something at the first game, then we'll have a right chance.
Let me ask you about... Go on.
If you win that first game at Hampden, then I think that can get you... I think 3-4 points can get you through. If we can get 4 points out of two home games, which is a huge ask, I think that'll be enough to get us to third place, and that'll maybe sneak us the best third place into a playoff, the next round.
Robert, did you play for England against Scotland?
No, never played against Scotland, no. But you can imagine the atmosphere, obviously the stigma around Euro 96 and the atmosphere the whole country had. There's a lot of people that write Scotland off, you know, when England plays Scotland. It's a one-off game. The atmosphere, the whole stigma around the game. From an England point of view, I'd be concerned going into that. You look at that group, and it's a tough group for England. You know, World Cup finalist Croatia, tough game. Scotland in a one-off game, anything could happen. And the Czech Republic beat England 6 months ago.
The only thing that worries me, Charlie, when I look at our group there is, and I don't know if you would agree, is I'm a little concerned about the lack of goals at the top end of the pitch. Am I right to be here to think we're okay with that?
No, I totally agree, but I think... like Bo said, you know, if you can nick one at a set play with a Hanley or, you know, McTominay, very good near something like that, and then obviously you could, you know, you're defensively strong and give yourself a chance. No, we've not got natural goals. I think Shea Adams is somebody that gives us a bit of, you know, something different. He wants to run in behind, especially in a game where you play England and England might have a lot of the ball. There's nothing worse than not being able to get out. We had it last year at Reading, a bit frustrated with certain players who couldn't hold the ball up and it kept coming back.
Smelsey's coaching now.
Unfortunately, we're getting it was. But it keeps coming back, and then all of a sudden it's hard for the defenders and midfielders because you get frustrated and then all of a sudden you start making bad decisions. So, for Adams to be able to go and stretch the play and get us up the pitch, we can make a difference. I think Dykes is a different option to us. I think I'd like to see the two of them play together. I think we will play 3-5-2. So, no, I'm looking forward to it. And like I say, if we can nick a goal and get something at the first game, that then gives you the confidence and the belief to go on to the next game.
Well, I was going to say, sorry, Rich, I was going to say that if you think 3-5-2, I guess my next question is irrelevant because I'm thinking, how do you get the best out of two of the best left-sided fullbacks, really, that are around, and Tierney and Robertson? So I'm guessing you're thinking Tierney will play left-sided centre-back, don't you?
Yeah, I do think he'll play. I think he'll play in the left. I think Robertson will play as the wing back. Yeah. And at times you've seen them being able to dovetail a little bit, and Tierney will go on beyond Robertson and try and play in that wide area. But then that will allow whoever plays right wing back. I hope it's Patterson. I think he is.
Yeah, he was a late inclusion from Rangers. Is Nathan Patterson you're talking about, isn't it, Charlie?
Yeah. He's a young kid. He's played 10-12 games last season. You know, defensively good, can as athletic, can go forward. So I would like to see him play good on the ball. So when you know Tierney's bombing on, I think he can go and tuck in on that right hand side, and the other centre back could shuttle over and make it a three again. So no, it'll be good. And listen, we've had a couple of decent results recently against Holland and then Luxembourg. So we're going in with confidence, and like you said, the first game is crucial. And there's a buzz about the country at the moment, which is good, like, especially after this pandemic.
It's like Wales. Same sort of format you've got as Wales had in the last Euros, where on top of this first game, Wales had Slovakia in the first game and managed to get a result. And then they played England and they got beat. But because they got the result against Slovakia, I mean, ultimately they beat Russia, but they only went into that last game against Russia needing a draw to get through. And it's the same thing. I look at Scotland now. If they can get close some sort of result against the Czech Republic in the first game, it does take enormous pressure off then going into that England game, doesn't it?
For weeks in the last months or so, I've kept thinking England, you know, we've got a right chance of winning it because it's at home. But seeing them in the last two friendlies, and these lads that have played in the Champions League have not played in the friendlies. These used players that have not even in the squad. I'm just not sure how these lads that are coming straight into a major competition with no games in maybe 10, 12 days, how they're going to be. So England, like you say, if they do get beaten that first game, and all of a sudden that blows the group right open. It is a tough group, but we all, listen, if we can get, let's say, 4 points would be brilliant, and that gives an opportunity to qualify.
What about Bale and Ramsey, Bo? Have either got anything to prove? And if they have, can they?
I don't know about something to prove. People keep talking about Gareth Bale and, you know, is he the same player? I sort of smiled because I think myself, well, can't be the same player. I mean, it was five years ago. I mean, he's getting a bit long in the tooth now. Yes, he's still got the potential, as he's shown over the last probably couple of months, certainly, that, you know, in any given moment he can transform a game with a pass and with a little burst. But that absolute, you know, energy and that change of pace that he had over 90 minutes, which terrified teams, that's probably gone for good, I think. But it doesn't take anything away from the fact that he's still a match winner. The question for Wales going into really the whole tournament is that they've got three key players, Ben Davis, Joe Allen, Aaron Ramsey, who basically haven't played hardly any football for the last 6 months between them. They've played, and that's all three of them started for an hour against Albania the other day, and Wales drew 0-0. And it's with Robert Page being obviously a little bit experienced in the situation. What does he do, especially in the first game? Does he have them on the bench where you're thinking, well, okay, you know, we'll bring them on after an hour, but after an hour, the game could be lost. Or do you start all three of them and think, well, we'll keep an eye on them and maybe have a look to change them after an hour or 70 minutes?
But start them,
those
both.
Three,
start
along
them.
With, like, Bale as well, key men. Yeah, you've got to start them, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, we talked about how you prolonged Charlie's career, Bo. Do you carry any guilt that you persuaded Joe Allen to join Stoke and ruined his?
That's scandalous. That's a shocker.
Is he taking responsibility by ending my Reading
case? I've seen nothing on that with Charlie.
I thought we needed a chuckle. Guys, listen, thank you both very much. Charlie, before you go, maybe you can't, but what was the daftest thing you ever saw Ian Holloway do?
How long have you got?
How long have you got? the best story I've got is that one time we played Derby Boxing Day away, and we didn't know the team. We'd meet straight at the hotel for pre-match because Christmas, and he just come in, the lads were having pre-match, said, listen lads, there's no meeting, no video analysis, whatever. If your name's underneath a teddy bear, make sure you take the teddy bear. And if your name's under there, you're playing. If not, the rest of the club. And that was it.
Were they laid out in formation?
Yeah, no, information. 4-3-3.
Brilliant.
Oh, that's great. Thank you again,
brilliant.
Guys.
Thanks,
Charlie,
guys.
And Bo, thank you for talking
you
to
care.
Us. Thanks, really
appreciate
it. Thanks, guys. That's very Ian Holloway, isn't it?
You just couldn't even begin to imagine the players' faces, could you?
If
a load of teddy bears.
The teddy bear, you're in.
Take a teddy bear. If it's not, you're
out.
Can you imagine when the lad just picked it up and he wanted his name and just said, right, I'm in.
I'm in.
In closing then, Robbo, England naturally, and it's only right, as you say, there's no reason why every nation starting can't think big.
Yeah, everyone should.
And we do need, and you're right, at home particularly, something to get excited about after the 18 months or so that we've all endured. What is, same question to you about, as I mentioned to Charlie and Bo, what's a good tournament for England?
Good tournament for England is winning it.
Can they?
I think they can, yeah. I don't think they will, but I think they can. I think they've got the players there in a one-off game. You need a little bit of luck in the knockout stages. You need the bounce of the ball. You need a referee's decision. It's not going to be easy. You know, people think, you know, it's coming home. It's at Wembley. Yes, they've got a huge advantage. Yes, there's a lot of things pointing towards England, but they've got a lot to get past to lift that trophy. I think a successful tournament for England is lifting the trophy, or at least getting to the final.
They're capable. I agree with you. I mean, the key for me, I think, Robbo, and the big one for, we talk about the luck of the draw and who you're playing. If you look at England's route through, if they win this section, which they should do.
If they win the group, it's a stinker of a route.
Well, this is what I'm saying. So, you know, if you win the section, Richard, they've then got to face France, Portugal or Germany in the first knockout stages. Now, come on, that ain't a gimme, is it? By any stretch of the imagination, those are three teams that one of those three teams they face will probably be in the six or seven most fancied teams in the tournament to win it. So England's route through, if they win the section, will be a difficult one, but not impossible one. I, like Robbo, think they can. They've got the ability to, but I also think that about four or five others. And I think, like most tournaments, things like, listen, we're going to have VAR controversy. Whatever we say, whatever we think, we'll play a part in whoever wins it.
We did at the World Cup. Whatever they say and whatever Infantino tried to persuade us, it was a mess. And actually, time and again, big decisions were incorrect.
Good. So that's going to affect who wins it.
I've got a predictor here, Andy. Look, sorry to interrupt you. That if all the groups go as you would predict, normally the other ones to first, second or whatever. So England then play Portugal in the last 16. Quarters, Spain. Semi-final, Germany. Final, France. That could be England's route through.
There you go. So if they win that, but you go in that route, then I'll have deserved it. That's all you can say.
Yeah.
I quite like the meme that we've all seen and gets regurgitated at this time of the year. I don't understand gambling, but apparently England are 12-1 to win it.
Uh-huh. What does that mean?
So, well, if you put a tenner on at 12-1, you lose a tenner.
That's terrible. That's shocking. You probably get a run for your money, though.
If you're giving me 12-1, I'll have a 10 out of you.
Thank you for coming out to see us. Paul Robinson, part of our beIN Sports coverage over the next month for Middle East, North Africa and New Zealand. As I said at the start, a whole host of guests with us. Now you've found us, get in touch at Keys and Grey Pod on Insta and Twitter. Keys and Grey Pod. Leave a review and also tell your mates that we're here.
We're on Spotify as well.
Oh, yes.
Okay, why don't you mention that then?
Well, most people, and Apple, and obviously all the other pods, sites, and if you subscribe, it downloads automatically.
Okay, good. Excellent.
If you've got Alexa, you can ask her now just to play it.
I've only just got back. I'm working on Alexa.
We'll see you next week. You got Alexa?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Got two in the house. They're very obedient. They're very good, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Alexa.
Robert.
No, I'll get one.
We'll see you next week.
I'm lonely.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.